Are you troubled by strange noises in the middle of the night? Do you experience feelings of dread in your basement or attic? Have you or your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost? Do you believe in UFOs, astral projections, mental telepathy, ESP, clairvoyance, spirit photography, telekinetic movement, full trance mediums, the Loch Ness Monster, and the theory of Atlantis? If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Fire up that email and contact the professionals. And if you have ghosts, you have everything. Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs. We're ready to believe you. So drop us a line at bishopshomegrown@gmail.com and check out all of our online services at thealchemistcabinet.com. The world is a confusing place, filled with all manner of shimmering distractions that take our conscious mind and our immortal souls and subvert them into the most basal of human emotions. Can any one of us, who considers ourselves a spiritual being, truly look around the carnival at the barkers, performers, and the caged animals and believe, even momentarily, that any of this is as it should be? My name is Alan Bishop, the alchemist of the Black Forest of Indiana, distiller, historian, occasional tinker, reenactor, and your host of If You Have Ghosts, You Have Everything. Have you ever noticed the world isn't quite what it presents itself to be? That something is just a little off kilter, just a little out of focus. Perhaps that movement you caught out of the corner of your eye was more than a shadow, that weight on your shoulder more than fatigue. I have lived my whole life like this, aware, awake, and waiting for the next experience, positive or negative. Always apprehensive, always analyzing. I believe that spiritual warfare is real. I believe from societal observation that others are becoming acutely aware. I believe that many are being influenced by forces unknown in a negative and spiritually deprived way. I see soft disclosure in every corner of pop culture. Join us as we pull back the curtain, as the veil thins and reach with us into the ether to reclaim the truth on If You Have Ghosts, You Have Everything. Hey guys, welcome back to If You Have Ghosts, You Have Everything. So tonight I'm actually joined by a cousin of mine, which just feels odd to say because I suspect that short of maybe my mom or my dad potentially for a segment or two here and there, you're probably not going to catch anybody else from the Bishop side of the family on this show would be my guess, more than likely. And I don't mean that in any offensive way. When there are black sheep in the family, there are black sheep in the family, and when those black sheep are involved in the sort of things that Joel and I are interested in, you know, it just sort of stands to reason that the others are not going to be necessarily supportive of such things, and that's fine. They have their thing, and we have ours. So, my cousin Joel has joined me, and Joel has got a background in magic, not like parlor trick magic, but like actual working magic with a K. Is something he's been interested in for a very long time, and I'm going to turn it over to him momentarily to introduce himself and talk a little bit more about his background, how he got interested in this stuff. So we're going to get into all of that, the sort of workings that he's done, the things that he's seen in his lifetime of working in this sort of magic, as well as, you know, I don't know, Joel, if you want to touch on it or not, but, you know, I know you've been doing some publications here lately for a select group of people. You may want to touch on that. And then Joel actually has a experience tied to Pekin as well, because his family lived here in Pekin for a while, and it may be related to some of the trickster slash high strangeness stuff that we've touched on in previous episodes, including the trickster episodes that Kim and I did, the episode with Bill Nicely, some of the stuff involving the haunting up the road up here off of Ferriby Road, that sort of trickster element that we've talked about that sort of seems to be inherent as a nature spirit here in Washington County, Indiana. But I'm long-winded, Joel. I ramble a lot, so I'm going to turn it over to you. You tell people who you are, where you're from, all that stuff, and let's jump into the magic.
Hey, thank you, Alan, for inviting me on your show. I'm Joel Bishop. I'm Alan's cousin. I've been interested in magic and the occult really as long as I can remember. I guess I was probably like 4 or 5 when I was playing out in the field, and I had no idea what I was really doing here, but I had like a little velvet bag, you know, like the kind of bag with a string on it that you pull together, right? And I was sticking rocks and herbs and dirt in there, like making some sort of like mojo bag. But I had no idea what I was doing at the time. I had never seen, that I can recall, watching anything related to the occult or magic on television. Although, to be fair, I got a brother that was very interested in that for a long time, so it's possible. But I've always had a lifelong interest in magic and the occult. Interested in spirits. It wasn't until my teens, though, that I really got a taste of real magic. And, you know, I wasn't going to bring this up, but when we moved back to Clarksville, occasionally I would ride with my dad to work at Morris's Body Shop, which that's no longer there. The building's still there, but it's no longer owned by the Morris's. And I would walk to the local metaphysical shop that was on Court Avenue in Jeffersonville. It was called Wizards General Store. Again, the building's still there, but it's no longer called that. I don't know what the building is now, but I was, I guess, lucky enough to see, and I know this is going to sound weird, but an actual magical battle the very first time I was in there. And it's not fireballs and lightning bolts and things of that nature. That's all fantasy stuff. But when I first walked into the place, the very first thing I noticed was that there was this pressure in the room. And there was water dripping from the fluorescent lights, and it wasn't busted pipes either. I don't know what was causing it, but you could definitely tell there was something off in the room. And I actually asked the proprietor, Keith, "Hey, what's going on?" And he opened up to me, and he let me know that him and this other gentleman apparently had a disagreement, and they were having it out with magic. So I'm kind of scientifically minded, and so I'm still kind of doubting it. This is all weird, but I'm still kind of doubting it, right? But it piques my interest enough that I come back again. And Keith again was there. They had this huge quartz, well, they called it a quartz generator. Basically, it was just a big, huge quartz point, probably about, 11 inches tall, maybe 4 inches around. It was this huge thing. And I asked him, I said, "What's this for?" And he said, "Let me show you." Keith picked it up and held it in his hands, closed his eyes for a few seconds, and then handed it back to me. He said, here, hold it. So I take it in my hands, and I kid you not, when he handed it back, this thing had a pulse to it, like it was alive, like he had energized this crystal. Well, of course, this is going to pique my interest even further. I have a natural interest in magic, but I don't know whether it's real or not, right? So, but now I'm seeing some really weird shit. And so I asked him if he would be willing to teach me. He wouldn't teach me. He was learning from another lady who I found out later on was actually making astrological charts for the Kentucky Derby, and she was being called from all over the world because she'd been so accurate. But I digress. They never would teach me anything there. They did turn me on to some good books, and I did buy some books from there. But it wasn't until I was probably about 19, I guess, 18, 19, where I really first got a chance to like really dig my teeth into it. I looked at stuff like by Anna Riva and Scott Cunningham and, you know, the whole Wicca stuff. And that was kind of cool, but that really didn't draw my interest, you know, as much as like the grimoires, which are like old textbooks on magic. And Golden Dawn style magic. I know Golden Dawn's not everyone's favorite stuff.
More hermetic, theosophic sort of stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Precisely. I knew just based off of what I'd seen from Keith and the stuff I'd seen at Wizards General Store that there has to be a connection to the mind, right? So, and the Golden Dawn stuff, the hermetic stuff, well, that's what it does. I mean, it's almost entirely about the psyche and the mind itself.
Yeah, the universe is mental. The entire thing. Exactly.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. It as above, so below. And we'll get into that later on, too.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure. I know that's kind of like a common thing now. People know about that. But I don't think
most people know the roots of it, though. That's, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, not to interrupt. But.
Oh, no. You're good. So I started practicing now religiously. Now I wasn't playing around. I really wanted to know. This was like a scientific quest for me. It really was.
Yeah. I think it might be worthwhile too here real quick, Joel, to make a side note. And again, no offense intended here to anyone, and I don't think they'd listen to it anyways. But it should be. I think people would appreciate this because part of the platform of the show is letting people have their stories, especially in a place where they can actually say the things that they believe. But Joel and I both come from a family of people who are very Christian, very religious. And so none of this would have been smiled upon, just like in my story. So just something to bear in mind. And I find it interesting too. You mentioned, you know, with the bag and doing what you did when you were a kid, which is exactly the kind of stuff I did. Mine was more like making potions, right? That was the thing I was, what leads to alchemy and all that stuff. But certainly there is this thread that is within our wider family of things that people do, even when they are religious, that they don't necessarily know where they come from, but it's stuff that's been passed down, or it's genetic memory. And so there is an aspect that I think is built into the Bishop bloodline, where maybe every couple generations, one of us black sheep shows up and is like, hey, you guys know why you're actually doing that? So,
I mean, I think you're spot on. And yeah, you, I encountered quite a bit of resistance. I had bought, now you got to remember, this is back in about 1986. Okay. I spent about $100 getting books from Wizards General Store. I'm like 16 years old. That's a lot of money for me, right? And those books, I won't go into too much detail on this, but those books ended up being destroyed, and it wasn't by me. So, of course, that was disheartening, including a red leather-bound edition of the Key of Solomon. So, wow. And that was, yeah, that was my pride and joy, as you can imagine. But it was a DeLawrence edition, which that's kind of like a cheaper edition. It was like a knockoff of the original S.L. Mathers. But nonetheless, that was my pride and joy right there. And it was ripped to shreds. So I got up the courage and I got another $100 worth of books. Some of them were the same, some of them were different. Those were destroyed. The second time, you know, I mean, that kind of pissed me off, I won't lie. And probably something I shouldn't have done. But there was a prized family Bible that I took and I just chucked into the woods as far as I could throw it. But you know what? None of my books were ever touched again after that.
Right. Seems to be the way it works. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to put you on a tangent, but I figured people might want to know that background because, you know, I think there's a lot of people that don't say the things that they experience or they don't say the things that they're interested in because there's no space for them to say those things. And that's exactly what the show is for. So maybe that gives people a little context for you very much in the same way that I do. There's a little bit of a rebellious spirit and like, I'm going to do this in some ways because you've told me not to. And because I'm also following my intuition on it, which is a little different than the way people in our family tend to look at things. So,
yeah, I would say a lot of the people in our family are followers, right? They're not innovative in many original ways. They may be innovative in, I don't know what the term, maybe common ways perhaps, but they're not innovative in like truly innovative ways. But there are a few of us like you, like yourself, myself, and so forth. But yeah, I encountered a tremendous amount of resistance, especially in the beginning. And even later on, I had a brother that gave me quite a bit of resistance. I'll save that for another time, though. But so I actually got started. The book that I actually used to get really going with was Donald Michael Craig's Modern Magic. Some people poo-poo the book. I'm telling you right now, it's actually a really good book, especially if you just do what you're told to do. You learn the lessons. And you do what you're supposed to do, you know, and it starts off with the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram, which I know quite a bit about now. I hesitate to say this. I probably know more about that little ritual than most people do. I've actually been able to dig into it deep enough to where I actually know what the mechanics are that make it work. The ritual does work, but that's what I stuck to. I stuck to that in the middle pillar for a very long period of time. At first, my goal was to see if it actually worked, right? And as I practiced, I realized that, hey, this stuff really does work. Magic is real. It's not exactly what I thought it was, but I mean, I'm seeing change happen here as I'm performing this, right? As I'm going through life and I'm doing this, there's some weird shit's happening. I've got synchronicities happening. I've got my luck starting to change. Things are going my way now. I even had an incident where I was going to a friend's house in New Albany and I had a quarter bag of weed underneath my driver's side visor. In the car I was driving, the headlights kind of pointed down. So, and I didn't know where these people lived. I'd never been there before. So I was up like on the steering wheel, so I'm like trying to see the signs, right? So I guess my car was swerving just like a little bit, and these cops pulled me over. You know, like a kid does. You know, my car was all dusty, and I drew like a pentagram on above the driver's side door, and the cop was asking me, you know, about the pentagram, and I told him it was none of his business. But so he asked me to get out of the car, and of course I knew the pot was there. I got out of the car, but here's the weird thing: when I got out of the car, I knew, I don't know how to tell you this exactly, but I knew he would not find that pot. It was as if there was a, I don't know, like the universe had like a bubble around it. And like, I won't say that I was in control, but that like I was protected. That's the best way I can describe it to you. And I shit you not, those cops, they searched the passenger visor. They searched the glove box. They searched under the seats. They searched under the dashboard. They searched in the back seat. They searched in the trunk. They literally searched everywhere in that car except for the driver's side visor. And they didn't find anything, and they let me go. So, yeah, you can say that's coincidence, right? But
That's part of the power of doing these things, right? Is especially if you believe them in them well enough that you're not, or you know they'll work well enough that it's not a concern to you, right? And I've been in situations like that too with what I do, where it's not that I'm not concerned about it. It's that I have enough of an understanding of what I am capable of doing that I become confident in myself and become not worried about it, right? And you even mentioned the Solomonic magic thing. I mean, you know this as well as I do. There are spells there for what they describe as invisibility spells, but they're really just turning down your light. You know, being able to kind
exactly.
of blend into the background, sort of thing. So,
right?
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. What I've found. I mean, yes, there are techniques to like kind of tune yourself in, right? But the biggest factor of all is simply belief. It really is. I don't mean like some half-hearted belief. I mean like you have true knowledge that this is so. Okay, that's the difference. People speak about faith, but for most people, I think faith is like, well, there's a good chance this might happen. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about there's no doubt. Like, you know, this is real. It's as if I know that if I have a ball in my hand and I let go, it's going to drop and hit the ground. That's the kind of belief I'm talking about. There's no doubt.
And I'll throw this in here too. I think that the minute that you don't have that belief, especially with hermetic thought in particular, and understanding those principles of hermetic thought, like you've if you're asking, you've already lost the game.
Precisely. Yeah. You don't ask. Yeah. This is you make it so. That's what you do. You literally make it so. So I mean. I actually don't try to monkey around too much with making things happen, because the reality is this. So I can see from my side what's happening, right? But I can't see what's happening on the other side because, well, that's part of the meaning of a cult, right? It's hidden. So I don't know really what all is actually being changed, what all actual changes I'm making on the other side. So I have done things, but I try not to monkey around too much with it, because the simple fact of the matter is you can't really tell what all the nuances are that are being changed, right? So I prefer to err on the side of caution. Now, having said that, I have done things. I had some friends, and it, here's another pot story. They asked me to get them an ounce of pot. This friend of mine, her name was Kim. She said, "Hey, Joel, do you think that you could use some magic and get us an ounce of pot? We've been looking all over the place, and we're trying to get it for a certain price, and we can't find it anywhere." And I told her the truth. I said, "Listen, I've never tried to cause anything to happen." I said, "But you know what? This would be a good test. I'll give it a shot, and I'll give it 100% effort, and we'll see what happens." So I had them involved with the ritual, and it wasn't overly complicated. It was just a variation of the Lesser Banshee ritual pentagram, to be honest with you. But later on that night, when we were done, or right before we were done at the culmination of the rite, this weird thing happened. It was as if I felt a bolt of energy. I mean, I didn't see anything. There was no electrical feeling or nothing like that. It was just like I felt this force leave me, right? I mean, that's the best way I can describe it. And I knew instinctively that it had worked. Mm-hmm. Now I didn't know then, but the next day, Kim came back over to my house, and I knew why she was there. She was there to tell me that it worked. She parked in the driveway, and she was like, "Man, Joel, you won't believe what happened last night when we got home." She said, "We weren't there more than 15 minutes when this guy that we knew that we'd forgotten about, like we hadn't talked to him for years, just called us out of the blue and asked us if we wanted to buy an ounce of weed for the exact price that we wanted it for." And I was like, "Yeah, see, it works."
Yeah.
So I mean, that was kind of cool, right? I mean, and it worked quickly too. But in my experience, it generally doesn't work that fast. That was the exception to the rule, and there were five people working on it, right? So I mean, you got the energy of five people versus one. Generally speaking, for myself, something on, you know, an average thing that you might try to get would probably take about 2 weeks for it to come to you.
Yeah, and to really put the effort in, put the work in, and also to plant that seed sort of subconsciously within yourself to do that work in such a way that it just becomes a part of whatever your routine is, where you're not really thinking about it. And those are sort of lessons of discipline sometimes too, that I think get lost in that modern idea of whatever people perceive magic to be. And, you know, people are incredibly impatient in the first place. You know, so they miss out on those things in many ways, I think. You know, and it doesn't, and you know this, it doesn't seem to always work, or sometimes it works in such a way that you know, kind of a whatever you want to say, the universal energy sort of poking you with a stick and hey, here's a humorous joke instead of what you asked for or what you said you wanted. Just to remind you to be a little bit more humble about what you're doing.
I think you're right. So you're also right that magic does not work 100% of the time. And, you know, and that's going to bring like naysayers out, like, "Well, that proves that magic doesn't work then." Well, no, not necessarily, because you also have scientific experiments that don't work 100% of the time as well, right?
Yep.
So, and it's, you know, I'll be the first one to admit, it's not an exact science. It is kind of between a science and an art. It really is. You were also spot on. This is something that, you know, you really have to put effort into, right? you had to put time and effort into it. You basically, this is a little bit of a tangent here, but it's relevant. Okay, so man has 5 basic powers. You have memory, you have willpower, you have imagination, you have desire, and you have reasoning. Those, you spoke about like, well, more or less like putting the intent out into the universe. So the universe and man are mirror images of one another. So now we're kind of getting to the meat and potatoes, right? What this stuff is. And that's the basic meaning of as above, so below, which is the Hermetic axiom from Hermes Trismegistus, or Trismegistus, however you want to pronounce his name. So what that means is that what is in the heavens is reflected down below, particularly in man. So you have a mirror image. What happens there manifests here. Well, conversely, that goes the opposite direction too. What you do is mirrored in the heavens, and that's what magic is. But the more you develop those 5 powers, your memory, your willpower, your imagination, your desire and your reasoning, the more you can influence the universe around you. And you know, that's really not an easy thing. Mental exercises are probably one of the hardest things you'll ever do, because you battle boredom, you battle tedium, you battle it's just stuff that, well, even, you're putting your mind through.
Even battling the and this is something I had to work on a lot. I'm one of those people that has an internal dialogue all the time, the time.
Yes.
And shutting that the fuck off for a little bit so I can pay attention to other things is something I struggle with. You know, that's such a built-in part of who and what I am in my subconscious that I, even in a meditative state, I will catch myself slipping into doing it without realizing that I've done it. Right.
Yep.
And that it's there. And then that also becomes, this would be an entirely different conversation. We don't have to go down this rabbit hole, but that also becomes a little dangerous too, because your mind is not what you think it is. It's a field. And so being sure that what you're hearing in your head is your own internal dialogue, as opposed to something else trying to reach out to you in a vulnerable state that you may or may not want to let in, becomes an interesting conversation as well. So,
yeah, I mean, and that goes directly back to what we were saying, that, you know, what happens in the universe or the heavens manifests here, right? So you've got other things besides us out there that are influencing us. But we also can influence those things because we're part of that great cosmos, that great cosmic scheme. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, all this stuff is fascinating. You mentioned like the internal dialogue. Absolutely right. If you cannot focus, and this is a big thing, if you cannot focus on what you want to achieve, it's very difficult to achieve it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that you can't, but it makes it very difficult. I personally use mindfulness meditation. That quiets my mind out pretty good. I used to have a lot of internal dialogue, but it's something that you have to, or at least in my case, it's something that I had to sit down and do every day. You don't have to do it for real long. I normally do it for like 10, 15 minutes at a time. But that allows me to focus my mind so sharp. It's very much like, I'm magnifying it. It's like I'm taking a magnifying lens to the sunlight and making it into a point. But you don't want that kind of focus all the time either. Mm-hmm. Like if you're driving, you know, you don't want to be focused in on one little spot on the road. You need to be keeping aware of what's around you, right?
Absolutely.
So that's So that's not good to have at all times. But yeah, you 100% have to have focus, because if you don't, if you achieve anything, it's probably going to be weak.
Right.
Because those energies, those forces, they need to be focused in tight, like a laser beam, more or less. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to be coalesced. Yeah. And that's what ritual does. Ritual allows you to be able to focus on exactly what you're supposed to be doing. If your mind wanders, hey, you know what? Everyone's mind wanders from time to time. The best thing you can do in that case, if someone is seriously interested in this kind of stuff, the best thing they can do is, when their mind wanders off of it, just be gentle with your mind. You can't be mad at yourself, because what happens is you're actually getting mad at yourself, right? You're getting mad at your subconscious mind. And your subconscious mind is much like an animal. So if you beat a dog, the dog is not going to like you, right?
Right.
So if you get mad at yourself, you're basically getting mad at your subconscious mind, and you're feeding it negativity. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to want to cooperate with you. So you have to be gentle. Well, whenever you lose,
so many axioms in that too, where people make mistakes. You know, where either they will say the negative thing about themselves out loud and let themselves hear themselves say it, or in the worst case scenario, say it in front of a mirror or something of that nature, right? And it coming back at you and that whole thing. So you start doom looping and you start to question those things. And this is where I think sometimes it's and you correct me on any of these things if I'm wrong on any of these things as I go, but I've been on this thing lately where I think part of the problem with the world in general is that, you know, from the Jungian perspective, people don't do the shadow work the way that they should in the first place, right? To tear down whatever castle you've built and get down to whatever the fundamental building blocks of truth are of that castle, you know, and then once you get it down to that, tear it down further. Are these absolutely true truths of you? And if they are they usable? How can you spin them to the positive and then start rebuilding your foundation from that? And maybe it's not a castle, maybe it's just a house or whatever at that point, but it's a seat for the workings that you're going to do. Secondarily, you know, I don't know how anyone in the world ever, and I think, you know, there are obviously positions of power in this world that obviously know how to use these things to their own advantage. I don't know how anyone ever could do anything outside of themselves, exoteric of themselves, without first having those esoteric truths in place about what the world is, how the world works, and about exactly who and what you are, and knowing exactly who and what you are. Secondarily, to touch on something you said earlier too, you know, magic not working all the time. One of the elements that seems to be overlooked, and I think that this is part of the dumbing down of society in general when it comes to just about any belief system or ideal system, is that, you know, we don't spend nearly enough time looking at the stars and looking beyond the stars anymore to understand what's going on, and understanding the astrology and how, whatever you want to call them, those seven celestial spheres, more than that obviously recognized now, but how those work in conjunction and against one another towards certain energies, and how you are affected by, you know, what everything was in the sky the moment that you were born, and how to play off of that. Planetary hours, planetary days, all of that stuff is a relevant part of all of these things too, right? It's sometimes it's not even that the magic wouldn't work all the time. Sometimes it's a matter of knowing what questions to ask in order to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, also, I mean, you spoke about like the astrological part of it. I mean, the best, if you're in a river, the best way to swim is to go with the current, right? So if you're trying to swim against the current, depending how strong the current is, you might not go anywhere, or it might even push you further backwards. So, yeah, there are real celestial timing. To be honest with you, and I'm not judging anyone who uses more modern astrology, but I prefer like more Renaissance type astrology, the more original type of astrology. Modern astrology has a lot of like pop psychology involved in it, and I'm not saying it doesn't work. For myself, I don't find it to be as effective as the older stuff does. I think they've kind of watered it down more or less. So, but yeah, astrological timing, you know, and a good way to view that is you can view that the planets don't have any power themselves, okay? The planets have zero power. They are like hands on a clock. And those, they point out certain times in the seasons where certain forces are in play. That's what they do. Those forces are cosmic in nature. They're not, I know they're called planetary, but they're not truly planetary. They just, you know, Mars is in a certain position, and so this energy is now in play, right? So yeah, and if you're trying to perform magic, and you're trying to perform magic at the wrong time when it's the tide is against you, yeah, I mean that can absolutely cause your magic to fail. But I think there are many reasons that can cause it to fail, though. Lack of concentration could be your lifestyle. I mean, if you're not living in harmony with things. If you're a very negative person, you're probably making a lot of shit fail. I mean, yourself, you know? And even the average person, you have to, when you go to work, when you live your daily life, you have to focus your mind on things to get things done. You can't be wishy-washy. Like if when I go to work every morning, you know, I got to be, okay, I'm going to work. I got to get ready. I got to do this. I got to do that. You know, I got to focus on what I need to do, right? If I wasn't like that, I wouldn't have a job for very long. So even in your daily life, you really have to use these forces. But it's the average person does not know, and everyone has this ability, right? But the average person... they don't know how to shut off the inner chatter. They don't know how to focus. They don't know what their actual powers are. And they don't know how to utilize those powers. Most people are, I won't say most. Everyone is technically using magic all the time. They just don't realize it. And most of the stuff they do, they do in a negative way for themselves, and you're actually hurting yourselves. And that's why in that little program that you mentioned that I have on Facebook, where I have a few select people, one of the first things I suggest to do is affirmations. And there's an extremely valid reason for that. If you perform affirmations the correct way, like with emotional intent, with belief, you verbalize it, you feel it, and then you try to live it, you are actually making a change in yourself, a positive change. Well, I mean, if you're using positive affirmations, obviously, but which I recommend, but you're making a change, but you're also learning to use those intrinsic energies that you have to make that change. So really what you're doing is you're learning the most basic form of magic that there is. So, I mean, and after you do affirmations, if you take them serious, after you do affirmations for a while, you will know what is required for basic magic. You will know, and you will have a good foundation. Everything else, like if you know, the different styles of magic, whatever you want to practice, whether it's candle magic or whether it's herbal magic or ritual magic or whatever it is, you will already have a solid foundation for that just from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and so that's that was something else I wanted to touch base with you on too. So, you know, figuring out the your magic over the years, right? And and what you connect the most with, or what sort of drives your workings. Is you do a lot of herbal work, for example. I know you make a lot of medicines and things of that nature, and we've certainly bought things off of you over the years at work as well. And so I'm curious to hear how you connect your herbalist workings into your magic overall.
Great question. At this point, I can literally, I mean, this is the truth. I mean, I can literally use any type of magic because I know what the foundations are. I know how to utilize it. I know how to make it operate. I was more into using herbs for magic in the very beginning, and then I totally dropped it and went straight into hermetic magic, like the Golden Dawn. And I stayed there for a very long period of time. Wouldn't touch anything like candle magic or herbal magic or any of that stuff. I felt it was inferior at the time. And to be honest, I don't truly feel it can do what hermetic magic can do. However, it can do a lot for one, and for two, it's much more powerful than what I originally thought it was, particularly if you know what you're doing, right? But yeah, like now my practice does involve herbs. It involves candles. It involves ritual magic. I know how to build rituals. I know what those... I know what those, like the gestures and the visualizations are for, what the symbolic structure is for. And here's a good example. If you know anything about magic, if you've heard, and I'm not talking to you, I'm talking about whoever might listen. If you know anything about magic, then you know that circles are used in magic a lot of times. Well, here is what a circle actually is. A circle is actually just a sphere. It's your personal world is what you're envisioning. That's what a magic circle actually is. And you're saying that this is what exists in your world, right? And then you create what you want in your world using that symbolic pattern that you have. A lot of people use, you know, like... the symbols from like the Tree of Life or, you know, Kabbalah or Renaissance magic, which, you know, that's a whole interesting topic too, because I won't say I've read every grimoire, right? But I'll bet I've read most of them. And they're all pretty similar. They have some differences. You know, there's a lot of spirit evocation in the grimoires, and we can touch on that too, like the difference between like daemons and demons, which you may very well know, the word demon, that is a Middle Ages word. Okay, the original word is Greek, and it's daemon. Daemon just means spirit. You can have good spirits, you can have good daemons, you can have bad daemons. You can have weak daemons, you can have powerful daemons. But in the Middle Ages, anything that was not an angel and was not directly attributable to God was considered of Satan. And so therefore, daemon became... Well, it, you know, I guess they pronounce it demon, but that became evil spirit is what that became. And so now that's what you have. The lists of spirits that you find in a lot of grimoires, those are just, well, some of them are gods from, you know, ancient times. Some of them are probably spirits that people have just encountered over, you know, over time. You know, through history and incorporated them. But yeah, I mean, those, and there's, you got, you have two different types too, because I don't know if you know about do you know about servitors, for example? Have you ever heard of the term servitor?
I'm sure I have seen it. I don't know if I could tell you exactly what it is off the top of my head. So,
well, no problem. What a servitor is a man-made entity. Okay, you can create...
So like the Blackpool at Grimoire touches on a little bit of that kind of thing. Or even like not exactly a homunculus, but yes, same kind of ideal, I suppose. So
it's similar. Or if you've watched the cartoon, Morty and
Rick and Morty, yeah.
Rick and Morty, right, yeah. Right. Mr. Meeseeks.
Okay.
Mr. Meeseeks is a type of servitor. That's exactly what he is.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. That makes sense. Well, and I mean, you could tie that wider concept even into some of the fairy lore, like brownies and things like that. Even if you think that you have not created them, you've given them a place for existence. So that sort of works in the same sort of concept.
Exactly. Now, I personally think you have both. I think you have actual spirits that they're not man-made, they've always existed, or maybe they're not always existed, but they exist outside of man, right? Mm-hmm. We are not the only living beings with spiritual bodies, right? There are other things out there. But in the same token, we can create certain things too that if they don't become living beings. So, and I do think in some cases, some of the spirits in the grimoires might actually be more the man-made types, but I don't think all of them are. Mm-hmm. I encountered, this was not man-made. I do not think this was man-made at all. when I came out of basic training, right, I moved in with my brother Doug in this trailer in Admore in Clarksville here, and I hadn't been in there like two nights. I was on the phone talking to my girlfriend. I'm laying down on the couch, and this pillar of vapor forms at the foot of the sofa. I didn't know what the fuck I was looking at, man. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I had no idea what the hell I was looking at. I'm like, what the hell is this? And it stayed there. It was about, I don't know, maybe a foot and a half across. And it was about as thick as cigarette smoke. And it stayed there for about 3 seconds, and then it just vanished. But then it really got weird because... Man, I swear to you, I had not touched any drugs at this time. Sorry, I had a cough.
Oh, you're good, man.
But as I'm laying there on the couch, these little golden flecks of light, man, just shot all across the ceiling. And again, I'm scientifically minded, right? I'm thinking... So to go back to the pillar, right? I'm thinking, okay, the moonlight's coming through the side door here. It's and it's probably forming some sort of optical illusion, right? Even though it disappeared 3 seconds later, I'm thinking maybe it's some sort of optical illusion of some kind, right? And so for the light show I saw, I'm thinking, okay, maybe a car drove by, the lights hit the window seal or window pane and caused some sort of prismatic effect, right? Mm-hmm. So I get up and I'm looking at the windows. There's no cars out there. There's no people out there. There's nothing out there, man. There's nothing. There's nothing that could have caused the light show, right? And it wasn't like, it wasn't super bright. The best thing I can think of that it was like from a Disney movie when when a fairy godmother would wave her wand and you'd see like these sparkles right. of golden light. So I'm sitting there wondering what the fuck I just saw, right? I'm scratching my head. And then it dawns on me, I just saw a ghost or spirit or something, man. And right. so Doug comes home later on, and I don't tell him what I saw. I don't want him to confirm what I saw, but I ask him, Doug, have you ever seen anything strange in here? You know, he looked at me and he smiled and laughed at me, Alan. He was like, you saw it, didn't you? I was like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. What do you mean I saw it? He said, yeah. He said, I've been sitting here watching television and this cloud of vapor would roll out of the hallway, man. I said, wait a minute. Are you telling me that you let me move into a haunted house?
Yeah, you might want to let somebody know.
Right, man. And he laughed and shook his head. Yeah. I was like, I literally just saw something, man. I saw something, some sort of spiritual being of some kind. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I wasn't afraid. I didn't feel any sense of some evil presence or anything. I didn't feel anything untoward. In fact, I didn't feel anything at all. I just saw this weird phenomena. You know, that's all it was. No, I was freaked out later on when I realized I saw something weird, you know. But when I saw it, I wasn't scared at all.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I've seen all kinds of weird shit. I mean, people would probably think that it's all attributable to drugs or hallucinogens. And I'm not saying that, you know, I haven't done some of that stuff after I've seen that stuff, but I'm telling you what I've seen, it is not attributable to that kind of stuff.
Well, so. And I've got some more questions on those spirits here in just a second, but you know, again, this is sort of a thing that runs in our family, and so I'm sure you've heard this. I think you were even there when last time that any of the old timers were around to tell the story. But there's a story in our family of your grandfather, my great grandfather, seeing the devil on a walking path, and that whole story, you know.
Oh yes.
Could be attributable a couple different ways, but certainly something was going on there that affected him in a way that his children had never seen him affected that way before. So, you know, I think there's a sensitivity that probably runs in our genetic memory and our DNA that probably allows for some of that stuff to pass through and for it to get through the normal filters that a lot of people have. When it comes to some of those spirits and some of those daemons, and things of that nature. So you mentioned some of them, you know, being old gods, which I certainly believe as well. One of the conclusions that I've come to recently, or seem to have come to, well, there's a few different things. This conversation can go in a million different ways, you know. But, you know, even when you're working with energies, right, like everybody wants to talk to the dead and all that stuff. Well, dead humans don't know that much more than live humans do most of the time if they're stuck on this plane of existence. So yes, they know their time period. They know things that you may not otherwise know or have access to, but there's no great spiritual awakening coming from talking to something that is stuck in this realm for sure. But one conclusion that I have come to is that some of those, whether you call them archetypes or spirits or old gods or whatever, what have you, it would seem to me that at least in some cases, some of those things were things that were literally here on this plane of existence in some sort of physical form or manifestation or shape as teachers of humanity in general. I think Hermes Trismegistus is probably the most obvious of those. I think Hecate makes a lot of sense. And I'm curious if you, and those seem to be ones that also have a lot more, I hesitate to use the word usefulness, maybe a lot more power. They seem to be able to come through a lot heavier. And I guess sort of a twofold question, because it's a thing that I always wonder about, right? So, A, if you think that some of those things were ever here in that sort of corporeal form or in some sort of form where they were, you know, they were actually here as teachers or masters or adepts or whatever you want to call them. And B, because I just goofy things that I wonder about, right? So You have stories about people like you and I reaching out, touching base with whatever these powers are, these celestial powers, understanding how to work ritual implements, or even sometimes in cases of people that are incredibly already gifted, that are just playing with chaos magic, the things that they come into contact with. But you do have to wonder to some degree, right? These are living beings, not in the same physical sense that we are. But what the hell are they doing when they're not fucking with us, you know?
Yeah, you know, the second one's a very good question. So to answer the first question, I don't know, but I suspect that either there have been and still are teachers maybe floating around, perhaps, or at least some portion of them are, right? What they do in the meantime, well, man, that's a good question. So many possibilities there. They could be just resting in the ether, if you want to call it that, or in the astral. They could just be resting there. They could be doing other stuff. If they are actually living intelligences, they could be off doing other things. Mm-hmm. But here's what I know for sure, though. If they were, in fact, if some of those things are living beings, at least spiritually alive, right? Mm-hmm. Then they have to be in contact with just about everything at one time.
Yes.
Which means that they would be picking up anything that we're putting out, or anything else that's putting out. I mean, I know this is maybe getting a little far out there, but they could be even be going to another planet someplace and speaking to someone there, or mm-hmm. helping someone else out there, you know? I don't know. I certainly believe that there probably is other life out there in the universe. I don't think that we're the only things.
And the reason I kind of touch on that too is because, you know, there, and I go all the way in depth on all those things on this show. So there's really no like line where I'm like, yeah, we're not going there sort of thing. Right. But I certainly, to me, and the philosophy that I have stumbled into, developed of my own accord, whatever, it would almost seem as though, and this is a very Gnostic thought, maybe even a Hermetic thought, sort of bordering on the two of them. This kind of goes back to that planetary thing, right? The seven celestial spheres, that whole thing. You can even look at the Old Testament and, you know, the archons of this current darkness, these sort of guardians of this lower realm sort of thing, that if you can overcome them and learn to use them, then you can use the clay of this earth for gifts and for the good of the world and the community, Solomon's Temple, all those sort of things sort of tying together. But it would seem to be that everything is almost set up for this to be this realm, this earth, whatever one wants to call it, to be a school of sorts, that everything is sort of, why otherwise would any of these entities have any desire to, and don't get me wrong, I understand, you know, some of the, especially some of the Solomonic magic and using some of the lower entities, forcing them to do some of the things that you'd like them to, or some of the Enochian key stuff. I understand that. But why would the ones that don't have to fool with us bother in any way, shape, or form? If there was not some mannerism, some mechanism of sorts for this to be a learning situation, a gift of life and physicality, you know, and for the lower ones, I would even argue that, you know, when it comes to some of those that come in from the more negative side of things, even a reason that they want to come into us and experience the physicality, because otherwise not being able to feel any of those things, negative and positive. But I'm curious your thoughts on that, this sort of idea, philosophy of like a soul school sort of thing. Seems to be happening.
I have an answer for you, but it's a little deep, and yeah. I'll try to make this as, because I not that you can't comprehend it, that's not what I'm saying, but I want to make it simple for anyone who may be listening to this, right? As simple as I can anyway. So in essence, everything is God. Everything is God. There is nothing that is not God. So now, this is just my own theory, okay? I think what we are experiencing, we are, in a sense, the eyes and ears of God trying to learn about itself. And I think if you picture the universe as a big ocean of energy, and that ocean sometimes creates waves, right? If you're looking like, say, an ocean, and waves will come up and they'll rise up from the surface and they'll go back down, right? Well, that's much like a human life. So you and I and everyone, and animals included, everything that exists is a wave in that field. It's an individual wave where there's a concentration of God's consciousness, its awareness, right? And it sees things from its perspective. God, I think God is trying to perceive itself, because there's nothing other than it, right? So it's trying to get a sense of itself. And when our usefulness is done, that wave settles back down. The life force never, that consciousness itself, that life force that brought us into being, that never dies. It can't die. It is immortal. And, you know, eventually that part of that consciousness resurfaces again as a wave in that ocean of force. But that's kind of what I think that stuff is. Yeah. Those gods, those other spirits, that's God too.
Yep.
Okay. But that's just a different wave. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just like you are a different wave from me, but yet at the root, we're the same, right? Yep. It's the same force, right? But you are a different, a different version, a different interpretation of that than I am, and or anyone else is. Mm-hmm. But yet at the root, we are the same. And when you summon a spirit, or when you contact one of those things, what you're doing is you're really contacting part of yourself, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You're really contacting, because if, and I'm not saying that I am the God. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just one small spark, right? Mm-hmm. You're one small spark. Everything that exists is one small spark. Or you could even look at it like a cell in a body. You know, like I would be one cell in the body of God, and you would be one cell in the body of God. And each one of those cells are very important, but you don't need one cell to survive, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, that, and those cells die, and then you got cells that replace those cells and so forth. But those gods or spirits, or even like the negative ones, okay, it's all God trying to get a handle on itself, trying to figure out what it is, because there is nothing other than it. Mm-hmm. That's just what I think, anyway. No, maybe I'm crazy.
No, I think we're on very much the same wavelength when it comes to that. If I had to use a label to describe anything that I thought might be the correct thing, it would be somewhere between Hermetic and Sethian Gnostic, and I've allowed room for that, and your theory there actually allows room for it as well. So all is in the all is in all, you know, from the Kabbalion, that whole thing. So yes, the universe is mental, the universe is God, all those aspects are part of God. And even thinking about it from the Gnostic, prison planet sort of view of things, it still makes absolute sense. You know, the idea of Sophia breaking off from the Syzygies to sort of contemplate herself as, you know, wisdom speaks very highly to whatever the all subconscious is, right? It's still right. A part of the all. So it still works as a part of the overall program. Yadabaoth, you know, emerging from the cloud of physical matter and creating this world still works in the same way that, you know, we were talking about affirmations earlier, those positive affirmations or the negative. When you walk by the mirror and you say something really stupid to yourself that you shouldn't say out loud or in your own head, that's very much the concept of what Yadabaoth is, right? The ignorance, the donkey headed god sort of thing. So, all those concepts very much so work within that circle, I think, and all make sense. So, there can be nothing outside of it because nothing exists outside of it. So,
right. There's nothing outside of it.
Yep.
Even our thoughts, you know, and that's interesting though, when you take a look at, the majority of like the ancient religions, yeah, you've got different views, right? But at some point, they all kind of blend together, don't they? At some root level, they all kind of like have the same source. It's almost kind of like what we were saying. It's almost like those people actually got in contact. That, you know, they did their homework. They did the stuff that was necessary to try to contact true deity, right? It's just that this person contacted in this way, and so they developed this system, and this person contacted it this way, and they developed this system, because you're looking at, it's like a diamond. You're looking at different facets of the diamond, right? Mm-hmm. So that's, now we're getting into deep stuff here, man.
Deep into the pool for sure. So yeah,
we're getting deep.
I know you got another thing we want to touch on, and I definitely want to have you back on the show in the future as well, because there's more to talk about here without a doubt. But at one point in time, you and your family lived in Pekin, out Goskul Road, not too awful far from where we had another report of something interesting from a very good friend of mine that I grew up with. And I oftentimes on this show, because I so love the Black Forest region of Indiana, which is Washington, Orange, Lawrence, Crawford, Harrison, and Perry counties, and the high strangeness that particularly happens in that 6-county region. And not that it doesn't happen elsewhere too, because it certainly does, but that's my region of study mostly. Particularly around Washington County, because so many weird fucking things have happened around Pekin to so many people.
For sure.
And I'm still dragging those stories out of people. I have a lot more stories, but I refuse to narrate those stories myself. I want those people to come on the show. So what I will say before you tell your story is that not a half a mile away or so from where you had your experience, it may be a little further than that. I don't think it is. I'd have to look at a map, but a half mile by the way the bird flies probably is about right. Bill Nicely, who was on the show, told a story about when he was a kid seeing a very stereotypical sort of goat man character, you know, half man, half goat sort of thing, that very much so terrified him and his siblings. And I have traced that, in my opinion, along with all the high strangeness that sort of happens, let's say, to the east side of State Highway 60, including the farm that my grandparents owned and the Trickster episodes that we did here, to a spirit of a type that's, I believe, is distinctly tied to the land in this area and distinctly tied to sort of the southern ceremonial complex that was here, that was Mesoamerican influence, as well as perhaps some of the Prince Maddox stuff. There's something that was conjured up here that is still loose in the landscape. And there would have been a time maybe 10 years ago, if you'd asked me, I would have told you it was an entirely negative thing. I now understand in many ways what I believe its purpose is and what it's there to do. And it's there as a door opener and to get you to realize some things that you would not ordinarily get to realize. But that's my theory on it. So if you would, Joel, tell people about, and I'm going to try to say it without laughing, because we all know the folk stories of, you know, trying to catch these things, but the Wampus Cat story that you have.
Right, the infamous Wampus Cat story. This happened when I was about 12 or 13 years old. At the house that we lived in, we had a basement, and in the basement there was an old well. It had been capped off and so forth. But anyway, I was sitting in this love seat, and I was playing with some He-Man action figures, just minding my own business. About in the 10 o'clock position from me, there was an old wood stove, a chimney, and a hot water heater. And as I'm sitting there playing, I catch some movement out of the corner of my eye. Now, mind you, I did not look directly at it, but I focused on it with my peripheral vision. I saw, and people may laugh at this, but I mean, this is one of the scariest things I've ever seen in my life. It to this day, even. When I caught this movement out of the corner of my eye, I instantly focused on it with my peripheral vision. And when I did, what I saw was what appeared to be a very large black tomcat, only it was walking on its hind legs. And it wasn't walking like it was some sort of trained cat. It was walking as if that was its normal form of locomotion, as if it had walked on its hind feet all of its life. And of course, this caught my attention, and I was like really focusing on it at that point. Well, when I did, the moment I really focused on it, it didn't disappear like some fantasy of my mind or some illusion. It stayed there. It turned its head and looked at me. It turned its head kind of slowly, and it looked at me with these baleful green eyes, but they weren't like normal cat eye shine. This was the best way I can describe it is it's like they were like neon lights lighting up the inside of its skull. And when this thing turned its head and looked at me, I shit you not, the hair on the back of my, I literally felt the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And I took off. I mean, like, nothing could have caught me. I'm telling you, man, I was like lightning fast. I ran up the steps, and I was in tears by the time I got up the steps. I told my parents. They came down and they checked out the basement. There was nothing down there. Never saw it again. Flash forward to when I was 31. I was telling this story to my then girlfriend, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna get online. And because it was Halloween, that's why I was telling her. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to get online and see if I can't look up something on the internet on black cats and spirits. So I get to looking online and I come across a legend of the Wampus Cat. And there are multiple legends of the Wampus Cat. Some of them state that originally the Wampus Cat was a Cherokee maiden who had been turned into a Wampus Cat by an evil shaman or medicine man, or maybe even a female shaman. I'm not sure. But one of the stories I came across really piqued my curiosity because it matched what I saw very closely. And again, in some of the stories, it's like a cougar-sized cat. In some of the stories, it's like house cat size. The one I, one of the ones I saw was like house cat size. And as I'm reading it, man, it says that the Wampus Cat liked to live in caves around water sources. Well, look where I was at. I was literally in a basement, which was underground, just like a cave. And I was sitting right next to, like literally right next to a water source. So, I mean, that matched. But what really sent a chill down my spine was when I read the part that the Wampus Cat steals the souls of children. Because if I had not have noticed it, it would have kept walking straight past me on my left-hand side, and it could have easily gotten behind me. And then if it had been inclined to attack me, it could have attacked me from behind there, right? So I would have never seen it coming. That was really kind of crazy, man. And it was really kind of scary. But that's a 100% true story. That really did happen.
There's some more Pekin, Indiana high strangeness for everybody. So, yeah, this show is full of it. And I'm trying to find more of those people that will come forward and tell their stories, because there's been this whole area of Washington County has got some very strange stories and some very strange energy tied to it. And if I just get some of these people to come out of the woodwork and actually get on the microphone and tell me their stories, would be phenomenal. You know, it's as a quick aside here, you know, the thing is, people are still, they're not as hesitant as they used to be, because COVID changed some things for people and changed the perception of the world. But there's still a little bit of like, oh, I'm afraid of what people think of me, or this or that or the other. And, you know, just trying to get people past that, because we have this thing being in Indiana that I call Hoosier self-hatred. And it's this idea that nothing interesting, unique, creative, and or, you know, in any way spiritual or paranormal could ever possibly happen in the state of Indiana. That all happens somewhere else.
Absolutely, you know, it does happen here, though. But yep. No, I know exactly what you're saying. You think it won't, but, you know, it does. Mm-hmm. And this is a little bit of a side note. I don't know if you know about this or not, but there used to be a show on television called Erie, Indiana.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and it was about weird shit that happened in Indiana, too. You might be able to find it on YouTube, or maybe even Tubi TV, or perhaps Prime or something.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up for sure.
Yeah, it's called Erie, Indiana.
Excellent. Well, Joel, so one last question for you, because I know, you know, people that listen to the show that might be interested in learning more. You know, I don't know if you plan on opening up your Facebook group to any other people that might be interested, or if not, and if there's not really a public platform, if you can sort of give people a couple of books or titles or something like that that they could look into if they're interested in sort of going on their own journey and sort of digging into some of this stuff.
Yeah, no problem. First of all, I would love to have people come to my Facebook group. But, I'm going to keep it real. I don't want you, if this is something that you're not really interested in. I put a lot of stuff on there that I've been doing this for probably like solid now for close to 31 years. And I only have a couple of modules on there right now, and I'm in the process of making another module. But I'm releasing stuff that you don't really find in books, man. I mean, this is stuff that you find from like actual practitioners that, and some of the stuff I tell you, some people might not even know, even actual practitioners. So this is hard-earned work for me, but if you're truly interested, you're truly want to learn, hey, I will be more than glad. I will help you. I will hold your hand through it, man, if you're really interested. As far as books, I'm gonna name drop the first book I'm gonna name drop is. You know what? Give me 1 second. I'm gonna put you on mute here for a second so I can get this out. Cause
go ahead, man.
I did not. I should have expected this, but I didn't.
It's all good.
So the first book I would recommend, which is the book I recommended in the Facebook group to begin with, which most people would not think is related to magic at all. It's called The Rosicrucian Handbook and Hermetic Textbook of Success Secrets. You can get it on Amazon. I think it's like $15. It's a cheap paperback. Excellent, excellent book. It's all about controlling your own mind is really what it's about. It's really about how to be successful. It really is. And it 100% works. If you do what you're supposed to do, you will have success with it. I recommend starting at about about page 22 or so. I mean, you can start before that, but it's mostly like teachings that like the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians have, like their grades, what the lessons are for those lessons or for those degrees and so forth. And those are useful, but they're not as useful as the material that comes right after that, which is at page 22. That's where you'll start really digging into the meat and potatoes of it. I would read it through, apply the techniques that are in there. If you do them like you're supposed to, you will, in fact, have success. All right, so I'm going to give out two other beginner-friendly books, and they're kind of off the beaten path. They're probably books that most people would not find. One is, if you want to go like the, I won't say it's the easier route, but it's called Practical Solitary Magic by Nancy B. Watson. That's a really good one. There's actually affirmations in there too, but that kind of takes, it's very beginner friendly. There are some things I don't agree with. Like, for example, when she talks about like the element of air, traditionally in Hermetic magic, air is treated as hot and moist. And she says it's cool. So, I mean, you can use it like that if you want to. I would change that, though, to hot and moist when you're talking about the correspondences. But otherwise, that's a really good book. The best, this is my opinion, but the best beginner book that you could get, no bullshit, it's a book called The Magician by Philip Cooper. There's zero bullshit in it. It is highly effective, and you will get results from it. Any of those books, though, the two last books I mentioned, you will need to build like a temple area. It doesn't have to be elaborate or anything. And you don't have to have a whole lot of stuff, but you do have to have a few things. You do have to have some tools. Those tools, they are not magic in and of themselves. Those are just symbolic representations for the mind. That's what they really are. And there's a few other things I wanted to say before we close, because I think they're important. And if you read the last module up, I put on the Facebook group. You'll notice I gave an example of an Egyptian spell, and I pointed out how they are basically affirmations. I mean, they really are affirmations. In the Talmud, it says that the world was given 10 parts of magic. Egypt received 9 of those parts. So if that tells you anything about the magical ability of the Egyptians, and it should, that should tell you that you should be looking at those people for some insight into how magic is supposed to be done. Another thing I wanted to point out was that to the Egyptians, there was various forms of magic, but the primary form of magic that they used was called Heka. Mm-hmm. Heka, to the Egyptians, was supposed to be used for improving your life. Heka was not, and you can use it for baneful purposes, but that's not what it's designed to do, though. Heka was designed to alleviate negative situations in your life, designed to improve your overall life, and to protect you from the ills of the world. That's what it was designed to do. Heka is actually an Egyptian god. And the final thing, which touches on the last part, is yes, you can use magic for baneful purposes. I sincerely implore you to stay away from that kind of stuff, though, because everything's connected. Mm-hmm. And what you are essentially doing is, like, if you use baneful magic on someone, you are in essence hurting yourself. You will, I mean, if you do it right, you will have the effect that you want. You can curse someone. You can give them bad luck. You can make them ill. You can even kill someone with magic. But I very highly recommend that you do not go down that path. Much like they say in Star Wars, you know, once you go down the dark path, it will forever taint you. Mm-hmm. And that is the truth. So take it for what it's worth. But yeah, those are my recommendations.
Awesome. Well, much appreciated, man. And I think the show turned out great. And I think that a lot of people will enjoy it and probably have questions. And we'll have you back in the near future.
Alan, I appreciate it, man, you having me on here. I do hope that you have something useful here.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely.